They develop up to a certain point under the complete control of cosmic law, such law having been built up in the course of previous evolutions, but after a certain point they have to go forward under their own guidance and power in order to achieve the higher ranges of development open to them as the sons of God, that is to say, as sparks from the divine fire, and therefore of the same nature as the great unmanifest. It is here that evil, or unbalanced force, enters in. For just as the child crawling about the floor and learning to walk is at a disadvantage as compared with the child lying safely in the comfort of the cradle, so the infant humanity progressing painfully towards self-conscious, self-controlled adulthood is at a disadvantage as compared with the mindless spiritual beings of the Golden Age. Nevertheless, without this painful phase of learning by experience, mankind could never achieve spiritual adulthood and responsibility. We know only too well the kind of personality that results when an adolescent is denied all opportunity for experience and treated as a child by unwise parents. There is also a form of insanity which consists in the refusal to face life and a return to the infantile attitude. Both these things we see in the life of nations as well as individuals, and they help to explain what is happening in the world today. We know that children are not left to learn by their own unaided experience, but that adults take on the task of teaching them the cultural heritage of the race. This takes place also on group level. There are teachers, 69, of mankind, handing on the accumulated experience of previous evolutions, and these we call the masters or elder brethren. They are of human, not the angelic evolution, and are disembodied minds existing on the inner planes. They guide and teach by projecting thought telepathically, relaying the archetypal ideas of the divine mind. People who are sensitive to spiritual influences receive these ideas subconsciously and begin to act upon them without realizing whence they come. They receive them as general principles, however, not as concrete direction of policy. People with psychic development perceive these influences more clearly, according to their degree of development. The highly trained initiates of the occult schools are in direct and conscious touch with the masters. Thus is it possible for humanity to receive guidance insofar as it is capable of profiting by such guidance, and it is not left to grope unaided. Our work as a group consists in maintaining contact with the masters on the inner planes so that this guidance and teaching can come through. In order to do this, we have to maintain certain conditions at our headquarters, and this demands the services of a certain number of carefully chosen and highly trained people. In order to discover and develop such servers, we maintain an outer court and training school. The 25th of January 1942, the first American troops arrive on British soil. I have heard it said that Dionne Fortune, in her social attitudes, was something of a snob. This would hardly seem to be supported by her trenchant remarks about social privilege in her 100th letter. She also gives some hard practical advice on how to help remedy things, although not by going to the barricades. Letter number 100, for January 25, 1942. We are far from being a voice crying in the wilderness when we proclaim the mental deadness, and even decomposition, of the ruling classes of this country. The classes that supply the personnel of the higher grades of the services, that conduct our foreign diplomacy, direct our colonial empire and staff our civil service, for it is hardly possible to rise to the senior posts unless one derives from the proper circles, because those who make the appointments consider not only the professional qualifications of the applicant, but also his social ones. Will he be a pleasant person to work with, or a disturber of ancient peace? Is his wife socially acceptable to their wives? Incidentally, it may be noted that the most efficient persons are, 70, seldom particularly pleasant to work with, and that petticoat influence is one sign of corruption. One may say, with little risk of contradiction, that driving force, originality, enterprise and a willingness to take risks and responsibility are in inverse ratio to seniority, for a man with those qualities is a nuisance to his seniors, who will not admit him to their midst if the choice lies with them, which is very understandable, for old dogs do not like learning new tricks, and changes might result from the introduction of originality and courage. The record of the fighting in the present war shows that our tactics are good, but our strategy deplorable. Lions led by donkeys is a true comment on our nation today as it was when it was uttered 150 years ago. If all this be so, and everyone except the persons concerned seem to think it is, what can we, working in a meditating circle, do about it? It can readily be seen that, if telepathy is fact, we can affect national morale, but can we exert any influence on the efficiency of high places and high placemen? Yes, we can, and by the old, traditional method of sympathetic magic. The primitive man, when he wishes it to rain, invokes the rain god and sprinkles water. Algernon Blackwood in his fascinating short story The Regeneration of Lord Ernie, in Incredible Adventures, tells of the fire dance in which the participants imitate the leaping of the flames and so fill themselves with fiery energy. As has often been pointed out in these letters, we can help to bring in the Aquarian Age by living individually in the Aquarian manner. Even those who do not understand occultism can understand the power of example, but there is another factor in the matter as well as example. The sprinkling of water alone is not sufficient to induce the rain to fall. The rain god has to be invoked, just as it is not enough merely to receive the Eucharist passively, it has to be received with intention. If we live in the Aquarian way with intention, we shall exercise more power than that of example, as has so often been said before in these letters. We shall inoculate the group mind of the race at the subconscious level. We can influence the efficiency of our government by deliberately practicing with intention in our own lives the qualities we wish to see expressed in the national life. Are we disgusted with complacency? Then let us cease to be complacent for the sake of peace and quietness with our relatives, our employees and our employers. Let us have a little private blitzkrieg of our own in the home circle, rooting out long-standing abuses, doing it ritualistically, with incantation, identifying ourselves with the group soul of the race, and we shall soon see things beginning to happen in high places. 71. The 8th of February 1942, following the death of Fritz Tott, Hitler makes Albert Speer armaments minister. Dion Fortune returns to the theme of how to improve the world by esoteric endeavor in the next letter but one. And it might be remembered that the principles and methods she enunciated then, can apply and be worked equally validly now. Letter number 102, for February 8, 1942. The new age demands a new spirit, and it is pretty clear by now that the new spirit is not going to come in from the top. It is going to rise up from the depths of the racial subconsciousness. How can those who do not occupy a position of influence play their part in bringing in the new age? Leaderless, unorganized, with no means of making their influence felt in the face of vested interests and well-organized political machinery, what can they do that can in any way influence the course of events? Upon the physical plane they can do little or nothing. But in the kingdom of the unseen they can exercise a potent influence if they make use of that knowledge which is power, the ancient, secret wisdom of the mystics. There are two ways in which this power is exercised, and the one is ineffectual without the other. Both ways are well known, and there is no secret about them. The secret lies in the knowledge of the power that is brought to bear by their combination. First of all, let each one of us try to discern, through study, observation and meditation, the lines along which the ideals of the new age are shaping. Ignoring the grim specter of actuality and practicality, which, viewed from the physical plane, looms like a death's head, let them discern the ideal archetypes upon the inner planes that are already overshadowing this warring earth, struggling in the birth throes, even as the soul of the unborn child overshadows a pregnant woman. Only great seers can perceive the vision in its fullness, but all men of goodwill can catch some glimmer of it, and insofar as they see that light can live by it if they have the necessary courage, for it requires courage to defy custom and prejudice and walk in the light of a day that has not yet dawned. It will be necessary to face difficulties and make sacrifices, and there will be martyrs. Individuals must dare to live in the light they have discerned by means of the inner vision before it has come through to the physical plane. By so doing, they themselves actually bring it through to the physical plane and it is then in manifestation. And what is in manifs? 72, Tashan can no more be thrust into limbo again than the chick be put back into the egg. There it is, and it has to be reckoned with, for it has taken its place in the group consciousness and will work like yeast. If it is not along the lines of evolving life, the tide of life, setting against it, will neutralize it. Power is necessary, however, in order to exert this subtle but effectual influence, for no lever can work of itself. How then, you will ask, can the uninfluential exercise power? They can exercise the power that is set free by sacrifice, if they are prepared to suffer for their ideals. If each man and woman who sees the vision of the new age will live in that light in the face of ridicule and resistance and penalization, defying the pressure of public opinion and the organized forces of convention, they will suffer for their opinions. But if they persevere while suffering, the pain and distress they undergo thus voluntarily can be dedicated to the service of mankind. It will then exert pressure on that great lever whose fulcrum is not on this plane and which can move mountains. This is the secret of power: discern the course of things to come, shape your own life accordingly, lay upon the altar of sacrifice the suffering that will be your lot, and you can move the world. That is the way in which all reforms have been brought about, and it will always bring about reform if persevered in with sufficient determination, for neither principalities nor powers can prevail against the leverage derived from a fulcrum on the spiritual plane. But never forget that a lever cannot act of itself. Spiritual power will not bring about material things unless sacrifice sets it in motion. The 29th of March 1942, using the new G navigation system, RAF bombers devastate the German port of Lübeck. Over 30% of the town is destroyed. The principle of sacrifice as a means of power is again emphasized in the 109th letter, with a practical example from the group itself. There is also food for thought in the talismanic power there can be in writing a letter of protest with spiritual intention. Letter number 109, for March 29, 1942. Spiritual powers only take effect on the physical plane when they are translated into action. This is the significance and raison d'etre of ritual. Two things are necessary for the bringing through of magical power into manifestation: some form of action and some form of sacrifice. The action may be symbolic and the sacrifice no more than a risk, but nevertheless, 73, both these things must be done and incurred. If we had evacuated to Glastonbury, as we very well could have done, when the Battle of London began to get hot, we should not have been able to put into those letters the power that people have felt in them. Equally, it is not enough for us to point out the spiritual principles involved in reconstruction if we are not prepared to call down on ourselves the wrath of the powers that be if we see those principles put in jeopardy. Individuals can likewise make their powers felt by writing letters to their local papers and their members of parliament. More is effected in this way than is generally realized. LF Every individual dares to be a voice crying in the wilderness. There arises a clamor that makes itself heard even above the voice of the guns. How, it may be asked, can the unarmed prevail against the armed in matter of oppression? There is one way in which he can always prevail. He can stand up in the name of spiritual principle and say, "Shoot and be damned." And if the armed man shoot, he is damned. History bears witness to this fact on every page. The 26th of April 1942 in Berlin, Adolf Hitler takes absolute power in Germany. All laws that might stand in his way are abolished. In the 113th letter, Dion Fortune begins to look forward to the reconstruction of the shattered world when the war is over. Her firm view is that things are never going to be quite the same as once they were. Again, she comments upon the synchronicities between the meditation work of the group since the early days of the war, and the ideas expressed in the leading forums of public opinion in the nation. Letter number 113, for April 26, 1942. After the last war, despite all promises to the men who won it, the past was rebuilt on the original foundations by those in possession of power. This cannot happen again. For the basis on which that power rested, the control of the raw materials of the empire, is being destroyed on such a large scale that only planned reconstruction can replace it. The spirit of the age will never allow the control of the bases of life to be exploited for private interest again. Private individuals cannot rebuild what has been destroyed, either in this country or overseas. Only the nation as a whole can rebuild it, and what the nation builds, the nation owns. What has been will never be again. The old security is gone, but new opportunity awaits us. Those who cannot adapt themselves to the new, 74, conditions will suffer, but those who can will find fullness of life. Study the characteristics of Aquarius in order to learn how the new order will shape itself. Aquarius is the breaker of barriers, the disturber, the bringer of new influences and impulses. Those who are set in their ways suffer at the hands of Aquarius. Those who are fluidic and dynamic rejoice in the fulfillment of their destiny. Life values, not money values, will set the new standards, and there will be a drastic revision of the rights of ownership. As a matter of fact, the period of reconstruction has begun already. Those archetypal ideas we meditated upon in their primary form as spiritual ideals during the dark hours of the Blitz have now taken intellectual form in the minds of the nation's thinkers, and experts are coming forward to formulate them to practical ends. It will be recalled that this was forecast in the earliest of these letters. The expression of the ideas then given archetypal form is finding an unexpected forum in the pages of the Times. Canterbury Cathedral and Printing House Square are the two last places where they might have been expected to make their appearance. We had faith in the promise made to us by the Masters, that these things we were meditating upon in obscurity would be broadcast from the high places, but even our faith, which has had much to sustain it, did not run to this. One of two things is certain: either the Masters who gave the promise are what they claim to be, or the Warden of the Fraternity of the Inner Light is entitled to rank as a prophet alongside of Balamzas, a position not without distinction. Anyway, somebody discerned the shape of things to come correctly. If it is my subconscious mind, I can only say that it is a very useful possession. It bid us hold steady during each false alarm. It warned us in time when the real crisis came, and it had alternative premises ready for us to move into when our headquarters were bombed. It also informed us that the cause of damage would be a time bomb, that the parts of our headquarters used for our work would not be seriously affected, and that there would be no casualties. The statue of the Master of Masters over the altar in the sanctuary, which was moved over the edge of its plinth and turned half round by the shock of the explosion, stood as a silent witness amid the debris to something which was not of this world. If, however, we are right in our belief that spiritual influences govern the world, that these influences are not blind forces, but are transmitted intelligently through spiritual beings, and that those of humanity who are prepared to pay the price of selflessness may learn how to co-operate with them, then we have great hope in our hearts and great possibilities in our hands. Page 75. The 10th of May 1942, since it opened in March, 30,000 Jews from Lublin have died in the Belzec death camp in Poland. The 115th letter presses home the theme of post-war reconstruction and the destiny and responsibility of all the nations, together with the role of individuals in the new age. Ideals, we might say, that in many respects are still a long time coming, for a long list could be compiled of post-war atrocities, even to this day. Letter number 115, from May 10, 1942. As soon as the bugles sound the ceasefire, there is only one practical thing to do: draw a line between past and present, and write the past off as a bad debt. If there had not been faults on both sides, things would never have reached the pitch they did. There is little to choose on moral grounds between gangster methods and the moral inertia which allowed them to continue uninterfered with so long as they were applied to other people. If the Axis powers have ill-treated their victims, do not let us forget that what are now the United Nations stood aside and allowed them to do so as long as they dared. It was only when we woke up to the danger to ourselves that we took up arms. As long as questions of international morality and justice were at stake, we practiced non-intervention and appeasement. Do not let us, if we value ourselves, respect, invite the opinion of either Spain or China on our record. We, as well as Germany, should be grateful to have the past forgotten. As far as the present is concerned, the calculated cruelties of Germany and Japan are matched by the sufferings caused through the ineptitude of England. The less said the better about moral responsibility for the sufferings of the world, for there is not one nation which can show a clean pair of hands in the cold light of history. One thing can be safely prophesied when all else is uncertain: peace will dawn on a disorganized world. Nothing that was will remain and none will be immune. There will be no question of reconstruction, even if anyone desires to perpetuate the past, and it is difficult to believe that any save a favored few would do so. First and foremost, we must regard the planet of Earth as a unit, in which no segregation is possible, owing to the development of communications, especially air, borne and ether, borne communications, and the interdependence of commerce all the world over. That peace is one and indivisible has been so amply demonstrated that it has become a truism. We must never lose sight of this fact again. Our planet of Earth, and the human society thereon, must be organized as a whole, and if the democratic principle of government by consent of the governed means anything, it must be organized by a conference of victors as well as vanquished, together with the neutrals, if there are any neutrals left by that time. We must learn to stand back, as the adept stands back, and view matters impersonally, on a basis of abstract justice, considering neither our own worthiness nor the moral turpitude of others, but simply human needs and the available means of meeting them, and the right attitude to be adopted in dealing with them. There are going to be starving people, diseased people and dangerous people in all the countries of the world. There are also going to be people whose spirits are open to the influx of the light of the new era. It is these people all over the earth who must make common cause if human society is to be saved. We cannot maintain spiritual and social leisure houses and hope to escape the spread of infection from their sinister confines. Nations must not be looked upon, nor think of themselves, as self-contained units. They are simply sections of human society thus divided up for convenience of organization. Coordination between the sections is essential if the life of the planet Earth is to be organized on any other than a predatory basis. The only basis for coordination is a spirit of mutual goodwill. Goodwill breeds goodwill, and someone has to make a start in this seething mass of human misunderstanding and misery. No nation can do it in the first instance, because the mass mind always functions at a lower level than the minds of individuals. It is the men and women of the new age in all nations who must make contact across the national barriers as soon as the fighting is over, and they must meet as Aquarians, not as English, French or Germans. They must bring in the new age for all men, not for their own people only, because the new age is an age of coordination of the whole earth, and it cannot be brought in piecemeal. Those who share our ideals are on our side, whatever language they speak, whatever may be the color of their skins or the shape of their skulls, or by whatever name they may call their god or gods, or no gods. The 31st of May 1942, the RAF launched the first ever 1000 bomb raid on Cologne. 1,455 tons of bombs devastate the city. The raid is codenamed Operation Millennium. Dion Fortune's remarks about the need for social changes sparked a reaction from some of her readers. She therefore felt it necessary to outline the principles upon which she, the fraternity, and for that matter the Archbishop of Canterbury, stood. Letter number 118, for May 31st, St. 1942. A correspondent has raised the question of the political tone of these letters, so it may be as well to clarify the position. Our attitude is precisely that so well expressed by the new Archbishop of Canterbury in his book, Christianity and Social Order, issued in the Penguin series, to which we would ask our readers to refer for the detailed arguments and historical data whereby he defines the proper sphere of religious influence in social and political matters. Briefly, his contention is that religious organizations have the duty of guiding men's own minds concerning moral principles in social, economic and political matters, and of pronouncing a condemnation on whatever transgresses these. They should not, however, enter the arena of practical organization nor take sides in party politics. As these principles had been clearly in my mind for many long years before I read the Archbishop's book, wherein I found them confirmed with all the weight of scholarship and tradition, I trust I have never transgressed them in writing these letters. Speaking as an initiate, from knowledge based both on tradition and on my own seership, I have stated that the old order has passed away, and a new phase of evolution is already with us. That is, the age of Aquarius is an astronomical fact, calculated mathematically. Basing my conclusions on the occult teaching concerning the nature of Aquarius, I have tried to indicate how the new age may be expected to work out. When I say that the old forms of social organization will break up, and everything will be in a state of flux, that racial and social barriers will be eroded and a general intermingling take place, I am not enunciating socialistic doctrines but astrological ones. There will always be political parties, save in such circumstances that one successfully liquidates the other, the haves, who are contented with the state to affairs and wish to preserve them, and the have-nots, who are discontented with the state of affairs and wish to change them. Whether the haves call themselves conservatives, unionists, or supporters of a national government, or whether the have-nots call themselves radicals, socialists or communists, makes no difference. It is the viewpoint that counts. It has been said that political parties consist of the outs and the ins. When the outs first get in, they prove themselves radicals, and when they have been in some time, they become conservatives. The Fraternity of the Inner Light, in its teaching concerning politics, enunciates principles based on cosmic law. It will be found that sometimes one, and sometimes another, and sometimes neither political party is moving along the line of these principles. We affirm the principle, but we do not say that this or that party is the exponent of them, for politics depend much more on personalities than on doctrines. We say therefore to those who read these letters, here are the cosmic principles, here are the basic factors of the problems that confront us as a society. Sometimes one political party will be the most satisfactory at the moment, and sometimes the other. It is for you to decide which it is at the moment. It will be the other one presently, for that is the law of the cyclic spiral. If this is to be called political bias, I can only say that it possesses the elasticity and ability to bend round curves of any material which is out on the bias, and can give little sense of security to the party it is supposed to support. The 7th of June 1942, in retaliation for the assassination of Reinhard Heydrich, Reich Protector of Bohemia, the Czech village of Lidice is razed to the ground and its population shot or deported. In the letter following, Dion Fortune reviews the record of inter-relationship that has been shown between the work of the group and the morale and ideas of the nation. Letter number 119, for June 7, 1942. In last week's letter we pointed out that our teaching concerned principles, not politics. If those who have the back numbers of these letters will refer to them, they will see that these principles are today being expressed in politics. This is the way in which, as initiates, we work. We outline nothing, we meditate upon cosmic principles till these take intellectual form. If we are mistaken in our delineation, the formulation will be hazy and contradictory. If we have embodied it correctly, it will be clear, out and coherent. It may be said that in so acting we have actually done what we declared we had no intention of doing, but it will be seen that the delineation rises out of the meditation, and does not precede it. We do not set out with a clearly formed plan and meditate upon it, we set out with an abstract ideal based upon spiritual principle, and out of it a concrete concept clarifies itself. Now here comes the difference between participation in politics and the proper work of the servers of the mystical tradition of the race. Having arrived at an intellectual clarification, we then stop, we do not meditate upon that concept. Once having arrived at it, we take no steps to put it into practice or even to proselytize on its behalf. These letters circulate only among those who desire to participate in the meditation work. There is, in consequence, A gap between the initiates who bring through the archetypal ideas and the statesmen and economists who give them practical form. This gap forms the safety zone which prevents any wrong ideal or incorrectly formulated idea from being transmitted to the group mind of the race. The thought forms that have developed as a result of group meditation work have to cross that gap by means of their own inherent energy. Unless the cosmic power is behind them, they will lack that energy.